From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What up, fuckers? It's Christina Hutchinson.
And Corinne Fisher. You're about to listen to a clip from Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut-shaming podcast. On this week's episode, we interview ex-convict Danny Collins, and we talk about white privilege even in the prison system. We talk about the prison system. We talk about having open conversations with people who feel differently than you. We talk about the respect system
in prison.
Yeah, we talk about how to sustain a relationship for that 5 years while you're in prison, and how someone can stay by your side but still have boundaries. It's a very interesting episode. We encourage you to tune in. If you want to listen to the whole thing, you're going to need to subscribe to the Luminary channel on Apple Podcasts, and you can do that by going to apple.co/GWF. Again, that's apple.co/GWF.
That's why I tell people all the time, when we lock people up in prison, we don't eliminate crime.
All we do is
displace crime. We take it out of the public eye and then put it in this private underworld in which sexual assaults still happen, in which murders still happen, in which drug abuse still happens. I mean, everything still goes on because our whole mindset is meant to be punitive and nothing about it is rehabilitating.
Right. And then because we wonder why. If you actually wanted people to get better, you wouldn't throw them in a cage.
Yeah. And the idea is that it's justified behind the criminals, but you're not taking society into account. You got to detach emotionalism from this. You got to use some objective reasoning and look at it from a point of view that if you really want society to heal, even the most harder, we should never lower our human rights as a society, our principles that we are guided by, to meet those of our most sickened or hardened criminals. And that's what we do. We match them at their level instead of trying to bring them up to the level of society.
And what they need is love, and that's something they probably have never gotten ever. And that's why you're searching to fill a void. And if the only thing that can make your energy flow through your body is to commit a crime or do something violent, because that's how oppressed you were as a child, as a baby, you couldn't express yourself as a teenager growing up, then of course you're going to resort. It's like, it's almost scientific. The human mind will resort to those types of things if you are repressing any side of yourself from when you're a kid.
And that's the thing. I've had to deprogram myself and unlearn everything that I've ever learned about life, about relationships with people, you know, like I said, with faith, with masculinity, with drug addiction and all the underlying issues. And I've done it without therapy. I've done it through trial and error, bumping my head against the wall a million times. And I still have issues with it. You know what I mean? I fight my own inner demons all the time. And I'm thankful that I've got some people that are helping me out with it. But this is the other thing. You get out of prison, they don't offer this kind of access in prison. And if they do, the label of being a psychological or being a psych inmate in prison is not good. You get thrown into camp. So you could be like somebody who maybe is suffering from a high functioning person suffering with depression or something. Yeah, you need some therapy, but you will get thrown in the same box with the same, with the people that are way far gone. And then the level, it's a one size fit all cookie cutter approach to mental health in prison. And that's
right. Because that was my question. Like, if you asked for mental health care, is it available? But so you're going to the psych ward where people where I'm guessing suffering from like severe mental illness, like schizophrenia or something, are also going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the security levels are a lot higher. The lack of care, it's just a lot more. Ugh. Everything about it is because
there's no empathy.
And that approach is what keeps, and this is the other thing too, like my biological mother passed away when I was in prison. And so she lived three streets down from me my entire life. I could never tell you what she looked like.
And
I never met her, but I called her for the first time in my life right before I went to prison. That was on the encouragement of my wife. She's like, you need to get some closure. This is what's been killing you for years.
Yeah.
You need to face it. So like I called her, we found her number on Google through the white pages on Google. Mm-hmm. And we call her and come to find out she lived three streets down from my entire life. So,
whoa, that's so crazy.
And that's when you found that out.
Yeah. Well, I kind of figured it out a little bit before then, but connecting the dots that I wasn't, like when I was young, and I don't remember how old I was. We had just moved into the neighborhood. My parents had bought their first house. I was playing basketball out in front of the house, and two girls come riding by on a bicycle. One girl points to the other girl and says, "Daniel, that's your sister, Rebecca." And they keep riding. But I'm young, so I'm not really able to process this.
Right.
And then
right.
I go to school, and the girl comes up to me. She says, "Daniel, you don't know me, but my name's Rebecca, and I'm your sister." So that's, I run as far away from her, but I don't discuss this with my parents at the house. But now I started to get curious and I start looking for things. So that's when I got the birth certificate. When I took it to my little league coach, the name on it said I had a mother's name that didn't match up with my mother. Mm-hmm. And then I had a sister named Rebecca. So later, years later, I ended up talking to my dad about it. And he always just assumed that I knew, you know, and it was never communicated in our house. He thought that I knew, like it was just almost like it was a given and it wasn't, you know?
Yeah. He didn't take the time to sit you down and have that
conversation. Never took me the time to sit me down and have that conversation. Yeah. Business is normal, you know?
Right.
But I became I started that outlash against my parents, against my mom. One time she told me, she tried to punish me, discipline me for something. I said, "You can't punish me. You're not my real mom." That was really the breakdown, you know?
That's a rebellion that, of course, a young child, a teenager would feel.
Yeah. So these are some of the issues I had. So when I found out that my birth mom died when I was in prison, my wife had told me, and I have a cousin that was in contact with my wife, which I'm hoping to meet soon. And hopefully I can meet my sisters as well too. But when she passed away, my wife had told me, "Well, this situation, if it bothers me, which it did, I can't go to mental health." Well, you can, but the whole process of filling out mental health in prison takes about a month. They got 2 weeks to respond to you. And by the time they respond to you in 2 weeks, it probably takes about another 2 weeks to get you on a list to see a mental health doctor.
So you have to
You have to apply for it. Mm-hmm. There's only one other condition.
You have to be in a position where you can advocate for yourself, which is already like people walking around day to day can't do that. Like you have to go, "Oh wait, I need help. I'm going to go get," like that's proactive. That's pretty proactive.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like if you're in prison, like everyone could use some mental health just being from being in prison.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
but that's part of the toxic masculinity in prison too, is that you have this stigma where you cannot be vulnerable. You cannot show emotions.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, so you got to bravado. I'm a man. I got to tough this out, you know?
Yep.
And that's the way that it's been taught. And that's the way it was always taught to me anyways. You know, that's the way I grew up. Like we didn't talk about things. So and I've always been probably an emotional guy that I've worn my emotions on sleeve.
You're human.
But to be conditioned to believe and act a certain way for so long, then it's just inner conflict. And that's why I've been at conflict with myself for years. And I believe that's what led to the drug addiction, even with my racism, with my, my faith, with, not being able to show emotions, all this stuff that you're conditioned and taught as a kid, and you got to undo it and learn things the wrong way. Like everything that I learned the wrong way, I had to figure it out. But the other option for the mental health that I was talking about is that you can declare a psychological emergency in prison. But the process of that is so humiliating that nobody wants to do it because you have to get handcuffed into a black box. They consider you a threat to yourself or to society. So if I just want to talk to somebody, then they put you in a green turtle suit and they put you in a cell with no sheets. And your food comes in a styrofoam tray without any eating utensils. And they can keep you up there under 24-hour observation, because that's the only way that you can get emergency right in that moment, is that you have to either say you're suicidal or homicidal.
Right.
And if you don't if you don't declare one of those, then you have to go through that process. Well, a month from now, who knows what could have happened in a month by the time. Yeah. So that's the biggest issue, is that the whole process of mental health in prison too, not only is it a cookie cutter, one size fits all, but the process of it is humiliating, you know?
Yeah.
If you really want to get the help.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting stuff off your chest is incredible. It's so therapeutic. We all carry around different stressors. Some of them are big, some of them are small, a lot of them are very big. But we keep them bottled up and it could start affecting us negatively. And then we act like a jerk to the people we love. And we're like, "This is not how I want to be." Therapy has saved my life personally. There are so many benefits of it. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. And it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. Although if you have experienced major trauma, highly recommend. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designated to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you could switch at any time.
Finding a therapist is like dating. They're not all going to work out in the first try. BetterHelp understands that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/guys to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/guys.
Yeah, they're taking advantage. I would imagine that this term, the term toxic masculinity, all the terrible things about all the anti-human things about masculinity that get put on boys, like don't cry, which is it's just so fucking ridiculous. You're a human being. I imagine that that's under a microscope in prison when you're, you were in an all male prison for all your entire time.
Yeah. And that's how prisons are. I mean,
yeah. Divided up into gender.
Yeah. So, and that's it. You see like, and then and prisons come a long ways, like with homosexuality, you know, like gang affiliations, like that's frowned upon 100%. So like when you see that, so even if people are having these tendencies or whatnot, it can cause them issues within, because it's once again, it's like there's that negative outlook on everything. You know, it's there's a certain stigma, a certain way you're supposed to carry yourself in prison that a lot of people, they struggle with it. You know, a lot of people will do things. And then you have some people like that will do something that is contrary to who they are just out of fear of being, what's the word I'm looking for? Preyed upon. So you have a lot of predatory. Yeah, like some people who are not normally, say, homosexual, right?
Right.
But will be in prison.
Oh, they'll rape another guy.
Well, not necessarily. It won't be rape because this is the way. This is how insidious it is. Because they know that these people are going to try to do it to them anyways.
Oh,
so they will make it look like they are the initiators or that this is what they want. And in reality, this is not what they want, but they're doing it just to survive.
Yeah, they're making that a more pleasant experience for them, even though you can't make that experience ever pleasant.
Yeah.
That's not. Yeah.
And is it true that you can get protection from someone if you allow them to have anal sex with yours? I mean, and please keep in mind all the stuff I'm telling you I got from movies. So,
yeah, I mean, there's definitely protection. And that's what I shared a video because and there's this idea, too, in movies that you see that. And it's different for different states, because I've talked to some people out in California that sexual predators automatically get preyed upon. In Florida, it doesn't necessarily work that way. You know, they can pay for protection, but also there's camera systems now. In the old system, that happened.
Yeah.
But to think that, you know, sexual predators are getting preyed upon every day, that they're getting beat up and stabbed every day, it doesn't happen that
way.
But they do pay for protection a lot, you know? And they also will be, you know, this is the other thing too. If there's things going on within the system, like if I've got my own black market hustle going on, if somebody's got this going on or something, they're not going to allow somebody to harm these people because they don't want them to go tell them what they got going on, you know?
So it's this ecosystem that is created.
There's an ecosystem.
It's a private prison, because all prisons are private, right?
No.
Mm-mm. They're not.
And that's the big misconception, too.
Interesting.
Private prisons are frowned upon now, and Joe Biden just signed a thing to where I guess that they're not allowed to do it. But it's the same concept, though. The thing about prison and mass incarceration is that most of the time prisons are put in rural communities that otherwise where jobs aren't as prevalent. So what they do is they build these prisons. Yeah. You create the labor.
That's the modern day slavery. That's where
it's the prison industrial complex. Now people who work at this prison now shop at the local Walmart. They shop at the local McDonald's or the grocery store, and they buy houses, and it propels that entire economy. And then not only on top of that, you have the private industries within the prison, the medical, the canteen, the food service, all that. So there's more jobs there.
You
got the labor of inmates. In Florida, you get no pay for work. They don't pay you at all. So not even a small pay. There's several jobs, a couple jobs that will staff canteen, staff barber. They have jobs such as, they have a thing called Pride here where they'll pay inmates like 25 cents an hour, 10 cents an hour, stuff like that. But really,
it's called Pride.
Pride is the name of the and I don't it's an acronym for something.
Oh, okay. I was like, is it have to do with gay pride? Like, oh,
no. It's like a private company within the prison system, and they make a lot of stuff for the prison that they also have outside contracts too. So this was a big issue, but,
because, like private companies paying.
And the issue with it was that you had other companies out in the real world that were complaining about Pride because Pride was getting the contracts because they were able to exploit cheap inmate labor. So now they can undercut the pricing.
What companies do you know?
Anywhere, city that they're in, and they're in competition with the local, whoever the local companies are, the vendors, they don't like it because Pride has access to inmate labor.
Yeah.
And they pay them all minimum wage. Well, they pay the state the minimum wage, and then the state pays the inmates the 25 cents an hour. And that's how that works.
25 cents an hour.
Yeah. By law, they have to pay minimum wage for the job. But what they do is the state will charge you room and board. And that's how they get their cut.
Oh, my God. So no one cares.
It's an elaborate system. And people don't understand how this system really works. And there's so much depth to it and so many layers. I have a friend, Rashawn, and he got put on an outside work. Yeah, Rashawn Clark. Yes. Yeah. And he got put on an outside work squad. And this is the first time I started to understand it in this light, was that he says, dude, I'm going to the box. And I'm like, for what? And he said, man, I don't like working for these people. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, it's slave labor. Mm-hmm. And he says, every time they put me on one of these squads, I go to the box because I am not working for the state for free. It's slavery. Yep. It's modern day slavery. And it goes against everything I stand on. But at this time, he's got his court paperwork in litigation. So he's got an appeal.
And Rashawn was in jail for being at a robbery, and he wasn't the one with the weapon.
He was 16 years old.
He was under it.
He got charged with a robbery with a deadly weapon. He was not the possessor of the weapon. He was with a child. The Department of Juvenile Justice recommended that he go to a high-risk treatment facility. The state obviously overlooked that. His brother, who was his co-defendant and the possessor of the weapon, got the most time initially. But both of them they both had plea deals that weren't conveyed to them, that weren't offered to them. So their attorneys had these plea deals. They never knew these plea deals that were a little bit less time than what they got. So Rashawn was offered 15 years on paper.
Were fucked by their attorneys.
Basically, absolutely. And he didn't see it. But his brother appealed it and went back to court and was granted relief. They granted his appeal. They gave him the benefit of the doubt, was the exact words the judge used. And they commuted his sentence to 18 years flat. They took away his probation and everything. Rashawn went on the same exact grounds with the same exact evidence, and the judge did not give him the benefit of the doubt. And he said, there's no way that the attorney didn't give you this message. But now their plea offers were on the same paper. You know, they were co-defendants, same evidence. And the judge said that their cases were not conjoined. I mean, I looked up every definition of conjoined, and I don't see how it's not. You know,
they were at the same.
I'm not no legal
property.
Expert. Yeah.
Right.
But
so now Rashawn is being forced to work for free for a company, and he's saying no, and they're putting.
No, he's doing it for the state. So the state it has a contract with the Florida Department of Transportation.
Oh.
And they started to lose some of these contracts because it's starting to get exposed more. But what happens is that the state has a contract with the Department of Transportation. They use the inmate labor to go mow the communities, so and all this stuff. And the contract pays the state, but the inmates don't get any money. And it's the way they say it is that they're paying for the room and board, and it's their debt to society, to taxpayers, you know. And that's how they look at it, saving taxpayers money, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's how they justify that whole process.
Wow.
But because he had his case in appeals court, he ended up going to work, and he's still working today and doing what he's supposed to do because he knows that in Florida, if you refuse to work, that's like the number
that
one.
Will not bode well.
They will they will put you in the box in solitary confinement, which is the most inhumane thing about prison for 60 days and take away all your gain. 60 days in a hole and take away all your gain time. So
you really I would imagine the mental fortitude that you must build inside yourself in order to not go crazy over the system, and you have to be a pro at that. I can't imagine the strength.
And I wasn't, you know, like, that's why I give so much credit to Rashawn. Cause when I look at this, he was a 16-year-old kid who went into a system that's designed to gobble him up as an adult prison. And he did not join a gang. He carried himself with dignity, and he educated himself. This man read everything you could possibly read, every book you can possibly read. He's the one that actually taught me about the whole 13th Amendment, you know, that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the abolishment of slavery, except for when punishable by a crime. Mm-hmm. And when he started to show me these things in this light, at the time, I'm trying to convert him to Trump. You know, I'm using Candace Owens' book.
Wow, yeah, what a 180 you made.
So I was full all in because I didn't understand. My racism wasn't built on the fact that I outwardly just hated African-American people. My racism was built on upholding a constitution and laws, you know, the system that that I'm supposed to be proud to be an American. And right. when the statues went coming down, because I'm in prison for all this, you know, and how dare you kneel for the flag? I was that type of, you know what I mean?
Wow.
I took it personal. Mm. So it wasn't so much that I hated African-Americans. It was more built on the fact that I hated that they were, like, it was almost like they were disrespecting our system, but not understanding that this system
was created. You didn't
know
that the system was built to disrespect them.
To disrespect them.
Right.
And once I figured that out, that's when I did the 180. It's because I was like, wow. And then I became collateral damage in a system because it's directly impacted my life that was designed to oppress them to start with.
Yeah.
And it was built on the backs of white supremacy politics.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, the 13th Amendment, when you get down to the language, it says you are if you're a prisoner, you are a slave. Like that,
yes.
It says
this is abolishing. Yeah.
You can't even argue that this is modern. This isn't modern day slavery because it says that it is in the Constitution.
Yeah. And in 1865, this is abolished. And then 1870, you have the passing of the Black Codes in the South.
Yeah.
And that says that, you know, behaviors that practices that are common to Black people are now a crime. So inevitably, what you did was make being Black a crime. And this is how the system started. So I talk about this on my social media a lot. And what people don't understand is that they'll say, well, just don't commit crimes. Well, you got to understand how this started.
Sure.
Where the system started.
There is a whole government waiting and pushing for you to commit a fucking crime so that, or do one thing wrong so that they can.
Oh, yeah.
I've
got 5 years probation right now. I'm afraid to speak out on it, you know, just because I know that speaking out on it, you become a target. But once I came into this light, you can never go back. Once you come into the knowledge of this truth, of how this system, that, because a lot of people get upset about the reactionary outlashes that you see sometimes in the African-American community. This is what this is the number one thing I hear white people hold on to, you know, and the people that I've been around in circles who would necessarily, they're the type of people that say, well, I'm not racist, but I've had my prejudices. You know, like that's the argument that I used to use, you know?
Right. It's not an argument.
Like I'm a closet racist, you know, like really I'm a racist. Let's get to the bottom of it.
Let's get to the bottom of it and talk about it.
And own it. But this is what I loved about prison. See, because my relationship with Rashawn, as I'm trying to proselytize him, and this is probably the only thing I loved about prison is the respect level in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because as I'm trying to proselytize him and convert him to Trump and capitalism and this whole system, he's let me speak my truth until my truth didn't make sense anymore.
He held space for you.
He held space for me. Man. And out here, that's one thing that does not happen, is that if you say something that goes against my ideological beliefs, you're automatically canceled. You're automatically shut down. People don't listen to you. But in there, there's engagement. And you can't
and
build race
time
relations.
Too.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah, that's true. You do have more time.
And that's what I share with people.
Well, the goal was to not cancel. It was to make you understand something that you very clearly didn't understand.
Yeah.
In order to do that, you have to show each other respect for you to be even be open to listen. If you know, you're not going to listen to somebody who's like, if I try to get a point across and I'm yelling, you're not going to listen to me. So it's a disservice to my point, no matter how good it is.
Well, and also in prison, you're stuck there together. So it's not like you can walk away. You can't turn off your phone. You can't close that email. Like the way we've created a society where we can really isolate ourselves from each other. And we have, and we continue to do so by not listening to other people's points of view. Like I have a whole other podcast that's literally about just this. So I'm very passionate about that. Like every day, every Tuesday, I basically say something that could ruin my entire career. It's real fun. but I think just the notion that there's things that you cannot talk about without fear of losing your job. Like if there is a subject that falls under that category, that in and of itself is an issue because why can't you talk about it? Why can't you question it? You should be able to question everything, you know?
Yeah, because then that's how you educate yourself.
And that's how you grow.
Thanks for listening to that excerpt with our interview with Danny Collins. I highly suggest that you listen to the whole goddamn thing because it is a fascinating conversation. You want to subscribe to the Luminary channel at Apple Podcasts. So to do that, you go to apple.co/GWF. That's apple.co/GWF.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.